Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Seeds and Weeds Podcast, brought to you by Small House Farm. Join us as we talk with gardeners, foragers, herbalists, chefs, and community activists to explore the many ways that plants impact our cultures and cuisines, our history, and our future. I'm your host, Bevan Cohen, and this is Seeds and Weeds. Hello again, my friends. Welcome back to the show. Today, we're going to be sitting down to chat with Felicia Ruiz, who is a curandera and author of the book Earth Medicines. Felicia is going to tell us what it means to be a kitchen curandera. We're going to talk about the importance of indigenous foods, and we're going to dig into the differences between indigenous food and local food. We're also going to talk about her book Earth Medicines, which is absolutely fantastic. I love this book so much, and I'm so excited to have this opportunity to have Felicia on the show. Now, before we get into the interview, there's some news from around the homestead here. In the mail, I just got the latest issue of Homestead Living Magazine. It's a relatively new publication. They just launched it last year. It started off as a digital-only magazine, but this year they've gone to print, and they're putting out a new issue every month. They're also doing this annual compendium. It's a collection of articles that they've published throughout the year, and that's what just came in the mail. This magazine is beautiful. It's gorgeous, and it is packed full of information. There's an article of mine in there. There's a piece I did about small-scale seed and nut oil pressing, but there's also articles about maintaining livestock, rotating your garden crops, growing corn, permaculture, raising chickens, beekeeping, just all sorts of stuff. It's a really awesome collection. It's perfect for gardeners or homesteaders or preppers. I mean, there's something for everybody in this thing. I'm going to drop a link down in the show notes to where you can get a copy or subscribe to the magazine. It's homesteadliving.com. In other news, just this week, I finally turned in the completed manuscript for the food preservation book that I wrote for Ogden Publications. It's been keeping me busy all winter long, and I'm thrilled to finally be on this side of it. Their production team, crazy fast, and right now they're looking at a publication date of this April, so right around the corner. This book is going to be out into the world before we know it. In the book, I dig into all sorts of food preservation techniques, you know, from canning and pickling, smoking, salting, fermentation, dehydration. And then we explore the history of how these preservation techniques developed all the way up to modern uses. Plus, there's a ton of recipes too, so I think you're going to love it. Once we have some more concrete details on the publication date, we're going to offer some pre-sale opportunities so, you know, folks can get their hands on the book right away. I'll talk about it here on the podcast, of course, but the first round of pre-sale announcements and the best pre-order pricing, it's going to be over on our Patreon. Our Patreon community, they're going to get first dibs and a discounted price. So if you're not already a member, you might want to consider it. In addition to the discounted price of the new book, our Patreon members have access to exclusive content, free seeds, our seasonal gift baskets, and our brand new herb co-op program. So, I mean, there's plenty of reasons to subscribe, and the support of our Patreon members is what allows us to keep making this podcast. As always, the link to the Patreon is down in the show notes, or you can go directly to patreon.com/smallhousefarm. And we have some new members that I'd like to welcome: Julie Hyatt, Earlene, and Lisa. Thank you so much for joining our community. We really appreciate all of your support. Along with our friends on Patreon, this episode of Seeds and Weeds is also brought to you in part by Easy Swap Pots, makers of easily transplantable fabric pots and reusable fabric liners. And right now, the folks at Easy Swap Pots are offering a special discount just for our listeners. You can visit easyswappots.com and use the coupon code SEEDS to get 15% off your purchase. Your plants will appreciate you taking this opportunity to try these high-quality, reusable fabric pots that are handcrafted right in Wisconsin. You can find the link and the coupon code for savings down in those show notes. All right, let's get on to the interview. Felicia Ruiz is a traditional healer, award-winning author, and indigenous food activist recognized for her work with food and lifestyle as medicine. As a child, she was deeply influenced by her great-grandmother, who was well-known in her New Mexico community as a curandera. Also called by the healing medicine, Felicia honored her own spirit and began learning folk herbalism, whole food cooking, and other holistic modalities with indigenous teachers across the Southwest, where she works with the sun, the moon, and the elements, offering medicine workshops and one-on-one healing sessions for her community. Felicia's work has been featured in Forbes magazine, Bon Appetit, and several other media outlets, including the Original Americans episode on the Hulu show Taste the Nation. Felicia, it is such an honor to have you on the show with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you are doing some incredibly important work there in Phoenix, and I really just want to dig into all of that. So what I think that we're going to do is we're going to sort of start at the top of your bio and then just work our way down from there. So to get us started, in your line of work, you're what's known as a curandera. So could you unpack that for us? Tell us what it means to be a curandera,
the work that you do and why it's important?
Sure. Curandera simply means a person who does healing work. I'm just following in the footsteps of some of my grandmothers who were also curanderas in northern New Mexico. I guess to put it simply, it's like I'm here to be a source of guidance for my community when it comes to keeping themselves well. So that includes body, mind, and spirit.
I read in your book about your great-grandmother and how she was also curandera. So it's kind of, I guess, like the family business, right? So could you share some memories of her and how those memories impacted the path that you kind of decided to choose for yourself in life?
Sure. First, I want to backtrack and say, I wouldn't say it was it's a family business. It's definitely a calling that one gets and or that other people in your family also see that you're, I don't really want to use the word destined, but like they see little traits in your character when you're young or just how you do things. And for me, my great grandmother, she worked a lot with herbs and plants in her healing ways. And so for me as an adult, that feels really in alignment with how I see people, like, you know, from my practice, like to help keep them well, not having to go out and get anything ultra fancy, but just like using different culinary herbs, even for their cooking to help keep them well.
To come back to what you said about it being a calling, is to being a curandera, is that something that only some people can do? Or is it something that's accessible to all people?
I think everyone has the ability to become their own healer. In our own culture and community, we're not supposed to call ourselves a curandera unless your community has claimed you as one.
And when did that happen for you?
I was initiated in 2018, I believe. You know, in our culture, when somebody has been working with the community for a very long time, usually people within the community will say like, oh, go see, in my case, Felicia, you know, she's a curandera, or go see that person, he's a curandero. And it means you've gained trust within the community, that you've also have results, like they can see that you have helped other people. But for me, I did have elders in my community that came together in a ceremony. And I really don't want to go into details of what that looked like, but it was through the elders in my own community.
All right. Now, the next accolade here in your bio is author. And I got to say that your book, Earth Medicines, is phenomenal. Stunning photography. So I would love it if you can maybe share with us a little bit about the experience of writing the book and the story that you kind of wanted to tell throughout the pages.
Yes. Thank you for asking. And I'm glad you enjoyed the book. I also love just skimming through it because the photography is so beautiful. I actually always wanted to write a children's picture book author. And so when I was kind of putting that energy out there and I got a call from an editor to write a book, I was thinking it was going to be for a children's book, but it was that actually to write a book on what I do, which is my work as a curandera. So the writing process was really foreign to me because I didn't know how to write kind of like a semi-biography lifestyle book. So it was trial and error, and I had a great team. It really helped me also distill what it is that I do in my practice, which is at the end of the day, it was working with all of the elements. And that's why I put the book into four chapters. So it's air, earth, water, and fire. And it's just in a way like a wellness manual. It came out during the pandemic. So I think the timing also worked in my favor as far as like people wanting to return back to the old ways to be well and heal their bodies. So that's what's up with that one. But I actually am writing a children's picture book series now. So now I get to at least have that little dream come true as well.
Oh, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks.
Can you give us a little sneak peek about what the children's book's going to be about?
Yeah. So it's going to be written through the eyes of a 5-year-old girl, and all of the characters in all of the books are in some way a piece of me. So how I felt I was at 30, how I think I will be as a grandmother, and how I hope to be when I become an ancestor.
That sounds awesome. To go back to Earth Medicines, I never would have guessed that that was your first book. I know that, you know, there's editors and everything that come into it, but it's really well done.
Oh, thank you. I really feel that means a lot to hear. A lot of people have said that to me as well. They thought that I had like this huge writer's team and all these things, but it took 2.5 years to write. And I tried my best to speak from the heart like I do in all of my work. And I think it came out in that way.
So let's go back to how we talked about how you organized it by the elements with the four chapters, water, air, earth, fire. I'd really like to explore that a little bit. How did you choose the order that the elements would be presented in? And also just the idea of the elements in general. Could you get into that for us?
Yeah. Well, I chose the four elements. In some cultures, they also consider the ether, but that wasn't something that I wanted to include for this, because what I chose to do was break it down into four elements and then have three subheadings within each element. Because in my work, I recognized that people were either eating or drinking their medicine. They were using the elements in a way that would help. I don't mean this beauty in like an American beauty sense, but more of just like hair care and skin care. And then I had the spiritual aspect as well. So it's four chapters broken down into three. And then I started with water just because I felt that as humans, we all begin in our mother's womb, the water.
You'd mentioned the recipes in the book, and I love you included recipes for food and medicine. And then even here in my notes, I use the word beauty. But what I meant by that, of course, like you were saying, was like skincare and hair care, like just taking care of the body. But I thought it was just really comprehensive. And I don't see a lot of books like this. A lot of the times books are, you know, they're just dialed into one thing, like it's a food cookbook or it's an herbal medicine book. And yours was very inclusive. So I was just wondering if you wanted to talk to us a little bit about why you chose to include all of these different modalities, so to speak.
Right. Well, the reason why I did was because in my practice, it really is about body, mind, and spirit. And I also like to include your environment, which affects your body, mind, and spirit. So for me to have written a book and not include the food that you eat, the things that you consume, the things you breathe in, apply to your body, like all of it is part of this holistic wellness system that we call curanderismo.
So next in the bio, we're going to learn that you're an indigenous foods activist. And I think this might be a pretty big question that I'm going to ask, but could you explain to our listeners what it means for food to be indigenous? And why does food need an activist?
If I'm here in Arizona, which is where I live, you know, we have a very large abundance of wild foods that grow in our region. Many people don't know that, but let's just use the example of the prickly pear, because that's something that I think people have at least heard of, maybe if not all had fresh. But the prickly pear that grows here, if it's grown in Argentina and then flown here for me to enjoy, like, to me, I'm not advocating for my own local produce and my own local food. And so I advocate, and I'm an indigenous advocate of indigenous foods of my own region, but I also help other people that are indigenous to other lands to also advocate for their own foods. Because what happens is a lot of food, at least historically speaking, a lot of food was taken away from the indigenous peoples of the Southwest, and we weren't allowed to grow them, eat them, use them, even use them within ritual. And so many things were kind of lost or forgotten. And so what I do is I work with communities. I've worked with farmers and just other chefs and people who also use indigenous foods of the area to kind of reclaim them, I guess would be the best word, and to just get them back out on our plates and on the table and just in our kitchens and homes. And a lot of the foods are just plants that our ancestors grew up with, but because of colonization, many of the plants, again, just we don't have access to, or they have completely disappeared, or they have been cultivated to near extinction. Like, there's just so much to say about that question.
There is a lot to say there. And I'm glad that you took the time to say quite a bit about it, because I think it's an important thing to talk about. You know, like, obviously, there's a big trend right now in local food, and everybody wants locally grown food. But I think that there's a difference between just something that's locally grown and something, a food that is literally indigenous to the land that we are standing on, right?
Exactly. Like you can have local food. Like, for instance, I mentioned I'm in Phoenix, you know, Arizona. Well, I can still get local food grown from local farms. And that's wonderful because it's not being shipped in from everywhere and it's still seasonal to where I am. But that can still be a kumquat, which grows very well here, quite delicious, packed with vitamin C, but it's not indigenous to the Sonoran Desert.
Right. And so, I mean, there's a lot to this. So there's the obviously the economics of it all. There is the cultural aspects of these indigenous foods. But would you say that possibly consuming the foods of your ancestors on the land that you live on is more nutritious for you, perhaps?
I can't really say that. I would say it's more, it's nutritious for your spirit because your spirit is like connecting to a food of the ancestors. And, you know, it's probably going to be more nutrient dense than other foods because it was a wild food. But yeah, I would guess too, it's probably aligning with the mitochondria. So perhaps then it does feel more nutritious as well.
Now, last on your bio is a natural food chef. And we're getting low on time here. So I've got one question and it's a very simple one. And I'm sure that your recipes, whatever you're cooking at home, kind of evolves throughout the seasons, right? So right now, what's the dish that's really calling to you this time of year?
Well, on my stove right now, I'm making a chicken bone broth, and I traded some chaga mushrooms from a friend who lives on the East Coast. So I'm putting that in my broth. It feels really restorative. I don't know where everyone lives, but here in Phoenix, we're just now starting to dip into like 50s, which for us is really cold. And a bone broth feels so good. And I just have all kinds of vegetables and vegetable scraps, actually, and my chicken bones and things with the chaga mushrooms. And it's just a wonderful thing to keep in the freezer and have on hand should you get sick, but also to prevent illness as well, and just to fortify your body.
I love that. We're in Michigan, and this morning it was 24 degrees. So I'm a little jealous of your weather there. But I have right now a pot of vegetable scraps simmering away on the back of the stove, too.
Oh, good. Yeah. So we think alike.
Absolutely. Felicia, this has been awesome. So what are the links that people are going to need so they can connect with you to learn more about your work?
Sure. Well, first, my book can be found anywhere books are sold. My website is called kitchencurandera.com. And my Instagram, which is the only thing that I use for social media, is my name.
Super groovy. I'm going to put all those links down in the show notes so everybody can click through and follow along with the work that you're doing and check out your awesome book. Thank you so much for being on the show with us today. I really appreciate you spending time with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Looks like we've come to the end of another show. Thanks again to Felicia Ruiz for being our guest today and to all of you for tuning in. Remember, if you'd like to support the podcast, you can always join our Patreon community, and you can find that link and many more at seedsandweedspodcast.com. This episode was edited and produced by all of us here at Small House Farm, and the music you're enjoying right now is Feel Bossa Nova by William King. Thanks again for joining us, friends. I'm Bevan Cohen, and we'll see you next time. Howdy, friends. Bevan here. You know, the Seeds and Weeds podcast is made possible in part by Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company, rareseeds.com. They're America's top source for rare and heirloom varieties from around the world, and they're publisher of the whole seed catalog. Their 2024 catalog is chocked full of heirloom goodness, new varieties, recipes, stories, and gorgeous photographs. You can order yours now at rareseeds.com.